honored to welcome to Movie Geeks United one of the most versatile composers currently working in films. John Debney injects every project with a vital and passionate musical voice. Just listen to some of these credits and you'll get a sense of how versatile he really is. Liar Liar, Sin City, End of Days, Spy Kids, Swing Vote. I mean, you can't pigeonhole this
movie. No, you can't. That's what I love about him.
Yeah, he's tremendously talented. His Oscar-nominated score albums, after Debney received ASCAP's prestigious Henry Mancini Lifetime Achievement Award. That's got to give you some kind of mixed feeling that you get a Lifetime Achievement Award at the age of 49.
I know.
But it speaks to the man's greatness. His new score serves Hannah Montana, the movie, which opens in theaters this Friday. It is a great pleasure to welcome to the show Mr. John Debney. Mr. Debney, hello.
Hi, guys. How are you?
I'm great.
Thank you for
how are
that
you?
Great introduction.
Welcome.
You know, sometimes I feel like I must be 80 years old, but, you know,
No, not you, not at all.
I've been so blessed to work on a lot of different projects, and I love your show, and I'm just delighted to be with you guys tonight.
Thank you
so much. Let's talk about your childhood to start out with here. I understand that your father was actually a producer at Disney, so you were involved in films from an early age or exposed to them from an early age.
Well, I was. My dad was just a wonderful guy, and we grew up here in Southern California, which is kind of rare because, as I think you and your listeners might guess, a lot of there aren't as many native, you know, Californians that work in the entertainment business as you
might think. Only three.
Yeah, that's right. There aren't that many. And I grew up out here, and my dad worked at Disney Studios for really quite a while, about 40 years total.
Yeah.
And was just a wonderful guy. He was the producer on things like Zorro, the Mickey Mouse Club, the original Wonderful World of Color. Just a great guy and had a great career there at Disney. And I grew up sort of in that family, as it were, that kind of idyllic Disney family. I remember some of my earliest memories were walking around Disney Studios with my dad as a kid and bumping into a very nice chap named Mr. Walt Disney, and just remember getting a really warm feeling from this man, you know.
Oh,
and
that's great.
So that's sort of kind of my earliest recollection of any, you know, being around someone like that was pretty special. And I, you know, just from there, sort of grew up in that whole environment and, you know, with all the wonderful people that worked at Disney at the time. And then sort of just gravitated towards the business, I guess you'd say.
Well, did your consciousness of music in film, were you aware of that when you were watching those early films, those Disney films? Is that where it started?
You know, that's a great question, and the answer would be yes. My dad, at least back then, if you worked at the studio, you were really lucky because you'd get to bring home on weekends 16-millimeter prints of things like Bambi and things like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. And so, you know, I'm quite privileged to sort of, we'd have movie night, and I remember quite early on, I think it was 20,000 Leagues, that I remember watching one night in the dark and seeing that those incredible sort of very foreboding lights under the, you know, coming up from the screen that were underneath the ocean there. And I remember hearing Paul Smith's music, and Paul Smith was a really wonderful composer of the time, and he did a lot of Disney films. And so there was something going on, I think, magically for me in my head subconsciously. So I think that was sort of a big influence for me. And I look back on it now and I do remember that I was quite enthralled, you know, by that kind of thing.
Well, I know that you delved into music at a very early age. When did that passion turn over to the idea that you wanted to compose for films? What was that turning point?
Well, it did start for me at a very early age. I started playing guitar sort of by osmosis, as I guess a lot of us pick up things that we, you know, do through life. My mom played guitar. My dad was a pianist. And I started playing guitar around age 6. And
wow.
Then, you know, did what a lot of us do growing up in the 70s. And 60s and then later 70s, teenage years, I started playing in rock and roll bands and had aspirations and dreams of, I guess, one day playing in some big, big well-known rock group. That was sort of my road, and I played in a lot of top 40 bands throughout my teenage years. Then I would say once I got into college, I was a double major, acting, drama, and music. And slowly but surely just realized, I think Brand junior year, that music was my love and my passion. And I would just say that kind of through the college years and then getting out of, graduating at Cal Arts out here, which is a wonderful school out in Valencia, that I sort of, in those last couple years of college, and I would say in, out the year or so after college, I really started to gravitate towards doing something in TV and film. And I actually started and got a few of my first breaks by being an orchestrator on a lot of, those great shows that we remember from sort of the late 70s and early 80s. And then from there, it just sort of, as with a lot of things in life, it just sort of morphed and grew and started doing films, and really have been very, very blessed. And I've been doing films really in the main for the last number of years.
Yeah, you've been fantastically busy, phenomenally busy.
Yeah, very busy.
Let me ask you, maybe I'm off base with this question. You said you studied drama, and I would imagine acting classes and that sort of thing was involved with that.
Am I speaking to Jerry?
This is Jamie.
Jamie.
Oh, hi, Jamie. Well, Jamie, I would be embarrassed. I will embarrassingly admit to you, yes, that I did have aspirations to be an actor.
Yeah.
And I did some commercials that are really embarrassing. And every now and then I'll sort of bring out my old acting reel, and I can show my kids that, are now big kids, sort of how ridiculous that was. But, yes, I did have aspirations to be an actor.
Do you feel that helped you at all, or that the study of drama assisted you at all in your pursuit as a composer, your work that you do?
I bet it did. I think it has influenced me for sure, because I sort of approach what I do in the way an actor would, I believe. I get sort of emotionally... the right word would probably be emotionally connected. I try to find the character, the dialogue, the scene, in anything I'm doing that sort of, amps me up and gets my juices flowing. And I guess I do approach it that way. I mean, I've sort of come to that realization. I think it first and foremost, therefore, starts with what I'm, the acting and what I'm perceiving and sort of the emotion of a scene. And that's how I go, and I think that interest in acting and sort of the study of it did help me and probably influences me today.
Mm-hmm. I would think so. Whenever we talk to composers, and we love composers, we've spoken a great number of them, there's always a mentor, someone that was very strongly influential to them. And if I'm not mistaken, your mentor of sorts is a name we don't hear a lot, and we should, and that's Mike Post, right?
He is a great mentor of mine. There were a couple, and Mike would be probably one of the two that I would mention to you. Mike has mentored so many of us, and those of you that aren't familiar with Mike's voluminous resume, I mean, he is, just about every major television show that we all sort of know and love, I bet Mike had a part in composing the music. And back when I was a youngster and coming up, Mike was so busy that he would employ is not a great word, but he would have a number of us young composers come in, and he would sort of mentor us is exactly what he would do, and we would week to week write a cue or two or three or four for whatever given show that he would sort of want us to work on, and it was a wonderful training ground. Week to week you'd sort of you'd hear what would work in a piece of music and what what may not work. And Mike to this day is still really, really busy and active, and he's still a young guy, and he has helped a lot of young composers, and I think there are many of us that would would rank him high up there in terms of great mentors.
Yeah. Did you start composing for television primarily?
I did. I always like to tell young composers, I came up the rungs of the ladder in the sort of the most traditional way one can imagine. I was an orchestrator at first, and I would orchestrate for a number of wonderful composers that were doing episodic TV, things like Fantasy Island I would work on, et cetera. There were a lot of those kinds of shows that were going week to week and employing orchestras of smallish orchestras every week. So when I came up, there was sort of this wonderful opportunity to write for live musicians every week, and that's how I started.
Wow. Tell me about your film composition. Take me through your process. If you had your way, the most idyllic setting, would you want to be in, would you want to read the script first in that stage, or would you like to see the first piece of footage before you start composing?
I always love to read the script ahead of time, but I've just sort of realized over the years I've been doing this that I'm most sort of inspired by what I see. So I guess, we're all different. Some are visual learners, some are audio learners. I guess I'm a visual person. I really need to sort of visually see it and hear it and really get a feel for what's going on. So I really do enjoy sort of seeing scenes as they're cut, watch them a couple of times. If I can get a rough cut of the film, I love that. And I usually try to watch a rough cut two or three times. And then invariably for me, that's sort of the way it happens. I'll be watching a scene or two, or I'll be watching a rough cut, and then little sort of germs of ideas start to come in, and little melodies and notes, and that's really how it happens for me. And it could be 2 or 3 in the morning, and I might, wake up in the middle of the night and have an idea and hum it on the tape recorder, or if I'm at work, I'll run in and fire up all the synths and put something down. So that really is the process for me. And I would say with that process, what goes hand in hand for me is the thematic material for a given film. I'm very sort of theme driven, and I don't know why, but that's just sort of the way I work. So I'm always struggling with the idea of theme or motifs for whatever I'm working on.
Yeah. Let's take one of your projects, probably the most high profile of your projects, which is The Passion of the Christ. And I definitely want to ask you about that experience, which had to have been a very powerful experience. But when you're sitting down and you have the task of composing those first notes, what hits you? What came to your head? What made sense to you, those first few notes?
Well, that, every film is different. Fear is the first emotion that I feel. Yeah,
that's
quite daunting.
It's
one thing to get to vie for a job, and then it's another thing once you get hired to actually perform and actually come up with something. So I think fear is a good motivator. And a lot of times it's that. And in the case of The Passion, That was certainly the most difficult thing I've ever done, and it was also very different. So I would say, in the case of The Passion, lots of experimentation with sounds, and there's a very heavy ethnic influenced flavor to some of the score. And the rest of the score is actually quite traditional. So in the case of that film, the key for me was finally coming up with a theme for the character of Mary, Jesus' mother.
Yeah.
Because truly, that film in particular was, from the feminine point of view, in my opinion, I think it was all through that character's eyes. And that was sort of what Mel and I had spoken about quite a bit. So my job was to come up with, really first and foremost, was a theme for Mary, which was difficult, and but somehow I came up with something.
You did.
That Mel liked, so that was the main thing.
No, it's always good. If Mel likes it, that's good.
Yeah, always exactly.
Good. But I have a quick question. When you're for a movie like that, on one of the most important stories ever, do you go back and listen to like the scores of previous movies, like The Last Temptation of Christ, Ben-Hur, things like that? Do you do any research like that?
A little bit. And I'll tell you, but this is just me, you know, a little bit. I did a lot of quick study of ancient Jewish traditional music, liturgical music, sacred music,
right.
And then certainly listened to a couple of scores, one being Peter Gabriel's incredible score.
Right.
In that case, I wanted to listen because I wanted to listen to some of the instrumentalists on that. On that score. There were a few people in particular that Mel quite liked, and I wanted to sort of wrap my head around, you know, who they were and what they did. I bet I must have listened or re-listened to a little Ben-Hur, but honestly, there does come a point, and I think we're all like this, if I need to divorce myself, sort of metaphorically, in whatever I'm doing, at some point, and that's what I did. I did as much sort of study as I could and then just sort of try to leave it all behind and come up with another kind of a thing. And that's what I did. So it was sort of, the Passion is an interesting score in that it's not one thing. It's sort of a mishmash of many things, which at the time of I was doing it, I thought was kind of schizophrenic and you know, not a cohesive whole, but really, in stepping back and looking at it, it's kind of cool. It's sort of, I would describe best the score as starting very amorphous and very unformed chronologically. And then as we go through that particular film, it ends very sort of traditional and, I would say in a traditional way with the choir and the orchestra. So it's a journey that I guess the music takes. You know, which, quite frankly, a lot of that wasn't even by design. It just sort of happened that way. And I credit a lot of that to Mel, because Mel is really, really a brilliant director, and he has some great ideas and thoughts. And with the music, he just, in many cases, wanted to go really far afield and left of center. And at other times, literally, he would embrace, you know, an idea that I might have that I thought it should be just very traditional. So it was sort of a great collaboration in that sense.
you probably just spoke to this a little bit, but I was curious. The Passion is such an overwhelming film. The imagery in it, it's incredibly powerful. Did your music at times have to run counterpoint to that?
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yes, it did. One of the two or three biggest roles I think that that score had to play in that film was the role of being able to sort of take the audience sort of out of the literal visual that you were seeing. And the music was really, and that was by design, by the way. Mel and I talked very at length about what the music at points had to do. In other words, easing the audience, cradling the audience, and making it, making some of those very, very difficult visuals a little easier to sort of get through.
Yeah.
And so you're absolutely spot on. Particular moments like the horrific torturing scene, which is just so, you know, it's very difficult to watch.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And yet the music had to sort of get into, you know, get the audience member into almost more of a hypnotic sort of, I don't want to say new age, but there were sort of elements of that it sort of had to vocally bring you into another place. And that was really, really an intentional sort of, hope that Mel had that the music would do that. And so in two or three key spots, I would say, that was really the role of the music, was to simply blanket you a bit so you could get through those spots.
Mm. We have a caller. I'm hoping this is a caller with a question.
I hope so.
This is a 323 area code. My switchboard's acting up tonight. Let me try to unmute
this. That's out near me.
Yep. Oh, and then there they go. They're gone.
They're gone. Okay. We scared them off.
I put them on the spot. I'm so sorry. Now, this speaks to just how incredibly versatile you are, from The Passion to Hannah Montana. Tell me about what appealed to you about this project.
Well, I must tell you guys, I have boys. I have three sons, and they're all great guys, and they're all, older now. One's 20, one's 24, 23, one's going to be 26. So I wasn't the biggest expert on Hannah Montana when I heard about this.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those things. I've done many things. As you mentioned Disney earlier, I've done many films for Disney and have a great relationship with everybody over there, thankfully. And they called me one day, and they actually called the agent, and were, curious about my availability, and I was free at that moment. And it was sort of a quick turnaround that they needed to get the score and get the arrangements to the songs done very quickly. And so I just jumped in. I watched the film on a Saturday, I remember. This is probably right around the holiday time. And I was blown away by the film. I got to tell you guys, not knowing much about Hannah Montana, other than I knew how popular Miley Cyrus is.
Right.
And what a phenomenon she is and how talented she is. I knew all that. But I really was struck by the quality of the film, the quality of the filmmaking. The message of the movie is just fantastic, and especially in these days, I think we need movies like this more often. So it really was a pleasant sort of surprise and experience to be sitting in this thing, and at the end of the movie, I've got tears streaming down my face, listening to Miley's incredible song called The Climb, which is on the charts now.
Yeah, it's a good song.
It's a great song, I think. And just the message of the song, which is sort of a, where I was and am in my own life about, it's not necessarily the destination, but it's the journey getting there, that kind of thing. So that's one of the, when you mentioned, the dichotomy between The Passion and Hannah Montana, that's the fun part for me. As a film composer, we get to wear a lot of different hats, and one week I might be doing, for instance, a movie like Elf with my friend Jon Favreau, who's
mm-hmm.
a brilliant filmmaker and a great guy. And I mention Elf because it's sort of a personal favorite, and
oh,
I get to enjoy it. I get to enjoy it sort of every holiday time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so my job is one that is incredibly enjoyable and fun. And really, I would say just about every filmmaker I've worked with is different, yet equally talented, and they have points of view. So for me, it's just a very interesting study in not only writing music, but sort of the human psyche, and the directors are just very, very interesting. So
mm-hmm.
again, that's the fun part for me, is to be able to do a Hannah Montana and then turn around and do something else, the next
but
day.
But I would think, particularly when you've composed for such incredibly popular films, and other composers we've spoken to have spoken of this as well, the capacity to pigeonhole a composer, just like you would an actor,
sure.
would have to come into play. Do you turn down projects because you want the versatility in your career, or how do you avoid that?
Well, great question. Pigeonholing, unfortunately, is common in any field, I'm sure. It is just as common for composers to be pigeonholed as actors, et cetera. I guess if I were to pigeonhole myself, I'd be more of the family comedy, big comedy composer. Although, I don't see myself that way. I see myself more as the guy that did The Passion. I mean, that is sort of what I love to do, although I do a lot of comedies and
mm-hmm.
am very thankful for it. So to answer your question, yes, I think we all get a bit pigeonholed as artists, but you have to embrace all that. I mean, for instance, Jim Carrey, I've done a couple of Jim Carrey movies. I love Jim Carrey's work.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
Jim might, like a lot of us, could be pigeonholed, but then he'll do something else, and yet he does go back to tried and true ground, I think rightly so, that he knows that his fans want to see him in. So, of course, there are certain projects that if I've done three sort of one thing in a row, I might be a little more hesitant to not go down that road again.
Mm-hmm.
It is something certainly that one has to always consider. I will say that, and I do agree. It is a phenomenon that occurs. But again, I think that it's also about longevity, and I always try to stress that to young composers. I'd rather have a career, honestly, spanning 40, 50 years and doing a little of this and a little of that, than, maybe just becoming the niche composer the one that just does that. And although I've done a lot of certain things, I also think I've had a little fun and done things. You mentioned Swing Vote. It's a personal favorite of mine. It's a great, great little film that came out before. I wish it was had come out a little bit closer to the election, to be honest with you. But it's a really nice film, and the score is sort of an Americana.
Mm-hmm.
It is an Americana type of score. So I've been really blessed, whether it's Hannah Montana, which is the score is a little more sort of, it's in that American vein. It's a little more rural than Swing Vote. And then, I can turn around and I'm working on something called 1,000 Words right now with Eddie Murphy, which is sort of Heaven Can Wait film with Brian Robbins, a really, really wonderful director.
projects? Is there a dream genre that you'd like to work in? Perhaps the Western or...
God, yes. There's always a dream project. For me, probably would be big superhero movie. Haven't done as many of those as I would love to. Big sort of tentpole, I would say political thriller, but I'm not as enamored as that as I would be maybe with just a killer dramatic movie. Like I did one called The Stoning of Soraya M. last year,
right?
Which is going to come out this year, and quite frankly, it is a really terrific film, extremely powerful. I would love to do more of those if given a choice. You know, I would say a little more drama and a couple of big superhero movies would be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you got enough of those to choose from. So.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have your pick. They've got to give you a
there.
Chance.
Hopefully they're listening now, guys.
Oh, yeah. And finally, looking back at your favorite scores, could you pick from your, not of your own, but from other composers, pick three favorites for me, essentials in your library?
Well, that is a great question to answer because I can answer very easily. It would probably begin and end with two people, and they would be Jerry Goldsmith and John Williams. And I would say, for me, I'd start with Jerry. I would say there's so many. I remember the Sand Pebbles, believe it or not,
that's
an earlier
one,
which I just love. Anything from Jerry, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, if I had to twist my arm and ask my favorite Jerry, it'd be hard to tell you because I love it all.
Yeah.
John Williams, similar. I do remember when I heard Star Wars for the first time. That was talk about key moments in one's life.
Yes.
I remember going to see that film and hearing the London Symphony Orchestra play those amazing first strains of that theme, and I was literally, it was like an addict, you know, giving me a fix because that was really, really something that just absolutely floored me. And I think between those two guys, I would say, comes a lot of most of my inspiration, really.
Yeah.
Probably starts and ends with those two.
I would imagine, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, John, thank you so much for your time.
Yes, thank you.
We appreciate it so much, and come back anytime you'd like in the future.
Guys, I loved it, and let's do it again. I would love to do it, and
great.
Again, love your show. And,
thank you.
Good luck, and I hope to talk to you again.